This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
So good to be with you again. Remind those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial-free webcast online at thepromiseoftomorrow.biz any time of the day or night. Exciting, interesting, fascinating show here today. We've got professor from Dartmouth University, Hong Lu, and she has got quite a view for the future where we'll not need any passwords or anything. She says, sure, we're losing privacy, but she sees a utopian time when criminals won't dare to commit crimes because there'll be too much of a lack of privacy. And that we'll all have our own personal identities, like in our fingerprints or our body scent or something like that. You're going to find it riveting. She's also presenting at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference going on in the middle of April, the 14th through the 16th in Boston. You can find out more on that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link. Just click on that, tell you all about the show. Also presenting at the Homeland Security Conference is Jonathan Kendall. He's outreach for Columbia Southern University. He's going to be on later on in the program talking about how you can get new degree programs in Homeland Security all online. Okay, now to our first guest. Right now, I want to introduce you to a fascinating woman. Hong Lu is a professor of electrical and computer engineering at the University of Massachusetts in Dartmouth. And she received her B.S. in computer science and mathematics, and a dual major, M.S. In computer sciences from Hefei Polytechnic University, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the People's Republic of China in 1982 and 1984. We got her now. She's with the computer sciences when she received her PhD from New York University, the School of Engineering in the United States. And right now, of course, she's professor of electrical and computer engineering at the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth. Thank you so much for being with us, Professor Lu.
Thank you for having me.
We're very happy to have you. Now, you're going to be presenting a paper at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference when it goes on in the middle of April. And I wonder if you could give us kind of a preview of what we can expect with that paper.
This paper is a joint work with an undergraduate student. And this is the emphasis of our UMass Dartmouth, that we give our undergraduate students opportunity of doing research with the professors and experts in the industry, as well as the graduate students. And this student also is the recipient of undergraduate research summer and the fall funding from the university. So the paper is part of a teamwork, it's a multidisciplinary teamwork about endpoint authentication for Internet of Things. I don't know if you ever heard of Internet of Things. It's become very popular buzzword now.
Well, I know that you specialize in endpoint authentication of network security, and you've applied that in various domains, including transportation, healthcare, and business. But no, you really need to kind of fill me in a little bit. What are we talking about, endpoint authentication for Internet of Things, that sort of thing?
Currently, the Internet connects people. But before that, Internet provides information.
Sure.
So the when the Internet provides information, it's signified by the website. And then the currently, the connecting the people through the Facebook or Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. The one you are seeing now, actually in the near future, it's happening right now. You may not notice. It's the connecting all the devices. They're called the gadgets or the smart devices. We say smart means they have the processing power with computer chips and the memory storage power. And those are remarkably small devices. Like someone you can wear the pacemaker and insulin pump And also you talk about the driverless cars, the cars drive itself, which is not science fiction. It's happening right now in Google Campus, for example. So all those devices communicate with each other. And what's fascinating is they communicate remotely and wirelessly and also through the internet. The key point is, who is under control of these devices? Think about that. Now you heard about identity theft, people steal your identity, and then create account under your name.
Oh, yeah.
It's just you lose your money.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone else drive your car, or if someone else in control of the medical device you are wearing, it will be your life at danger. So it's very important to know who is in control of those devices. That's the point of our research called endpoint authentication.
Yeah.
Okay, endpoint authentication is not just the human who's using it, but also the devices. Anything that's connected to the internet has control, has memory, has intelligence. So we have to tell what they are.
Okay, but of course we're all told to use, you know, elaborate passwords.
And password is dead. And even though people tell you now you use password, not just say password, or you use password and with the not just the alphabetical letters, with uppercase, lowercase, numbers, special characters. But as Chinese way says, if you use secret over and over again, it's not going to be secret anymore. And how many of you, I have to confess, myself is in the security field, sometimes I have to write down the password. It's embarrassing. But I have to do it because I don't remember it. It's such a so inconvenient. So once you write down the password serves no purpose of protecting you, identifying you. Anybody can tell what it is.
Yeah, I know that other people have talked about the password going to be obsolete too, but I want to kind of get back to that driverless car and who is in charge and that sort of thing. And you're right, the pacemakers and the other stuff like that. Let's explore that a little bit more before we get into the passwords, if you don't mind. It's quite a scary thing. I mean, you've got a driverless car, you're sitting in your car and you're driving along, and how do you prevent someone from hacking into that or to the pacemaker or to the other things that are so essential? I mean, how does that fail safe? It's got to be a real worry for those of us who are seeing the future coming along this way.
Right. So the first is by gatekeeper. How do you prevent people from coming into a sensitive location?
Okay.
So the endpoint authentication serves as a gatekeeper. Well, how do you get into a secured place? One way, of course, is password. You're punching the password and door open lets you in. Mm. As we said already, this is obsolete. And this is, we usually in the computer network field, we call it, it's the first level authentication.
Okay.
Based on the knowledge, what you know. But the knowledge, once been spread, is not secret anymore. The second way you see that when people get into the secured place, they have a little card, and they just scan the card, a magnetic card, or sometimes now they use RFID, means it's just the electronic identifier to let you pass. So this is the second level of authentication. It's called what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have that device, the other people don't have it. But what if somebody falsify that device, duplicate, and make a one? So it's not secure either. And then the third level was based on was that what you are. Who you are, what you are. For example, the fingerprint is unique. Mm. It tells who you are.
Sure.
But now you know that this one, even the what you are, has different kind of levels. With fingerprints, you see the Apple's version 5 started to have fingerprints to let you use the device as part of authenticate that device instead of punch the password or the pass patterns that most cell phone, smartphone uses it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then people already demonstrate in the lab, you can make a fake password, but make fake fingerprints. So, now, what's next? Do you need some kind of identification that are not easy to reproduce, and that is but unique? And on the other hand, it has to be usable.
Well, yeah.
So if a security is not usable, it has as worse as not having a security.
Well, what
because it's so inconvenient. People won't use it.
Yeah, well, what are we doing?
This is the importance of what we are trying to do. What kind of authentication mechanics that's so easy and not complicated, not expensive, and the people will be willing to use it to protect the near future of the fascinating Internet of Things, the connected world of everything, not just human, but the gadgets, and expand our humanity.
All right, well, I have to stop you right there. What sort of protection, then, will we have, I mean, that you're describing right now and you're working on to develop, I mean, are we going to be able to develop such a thing, and in what form will these protections come?
This form, right now, at the prototype stage, that in the beginning, the proof of concept, mm-hmm. we use an off-shelf smart card. The smart card, the next version of the smart card, will have some kind of a way of reading your biometric mirrors, such as a fingerprint or mm-hmm. maybe something else, to tell who you, to tell what you are or authenticate who you are. And not only the smart card, not like the traditional, some other smart card you see, like they use in a computer to let you get in a smart card, plug in a smart card, and then to tell what you are, or who you are or what you have to get in the system. But our smart card, also one way is we engineered a different kind of architecture of authentication.
Okay.
Usually when you do encryption, why do you do encryption? Because you want to keep secret. You want to make information incomprehensible mm-hmm. for the adversaries or
sure.
for those people who are not authorized to read your information.
Right.
Currently, those encryption keys are stored with the data, with the device that you try to protect. Just you think about it. If you have a, what's the most valuable device, a piece of document
mm-hmm.
that most home has?
Yeah.
Let's see. Your birth certificate or your house mortgage?
Yeah, I would say the house mortgage or the birth certificate. Okay, I'll go with that. So
where do you put them? Inside your house?
Well, yeah.
Okay, so what if the house burns? How can you prove that you are this person with your passport, with your birth certificate, and with a mortgage?
So what you're saying is they need to be stored someplace else than at the place where it's sensitive.
Right. For example, you put it in the bank safe box, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's inconvenient. You have to go to there when the bank is open and use it.
Yeah.
So what this smart card idea is that now the security key, that's the one to understand your data, just like your birth certificate or your the house mortgage, you put with the car, with you, not with the thing that you are having. So if that thing's been done, if that thing's been taken off, just like a Sogan's case, right?
Mm-hmm.
He downloaded huge of sensitive documents. So let them download it, but they don't have a key. They cannot comprehend it. The key is not with the storage. The key is with you. And then we use authentication to protect that key. Nobody can have the key. Likewise, you know, the celebrities' photos being once they put in the up the cloud.
Sure.
It's up the cloud. They cannot get it down. Everybody see it.
Yeah.
Okay. But now, the celebrity giving this smart card with the key.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else stole your photos up in the sky. They cannot see it. They cannot understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Because only you, the celebrity himself, has the key. Now, they sue those cloud services. Say, oh, you got my photos exposed. Then cloud services can say, it's not my responsibility. You, how did you protect your key?
Okay.
How, if you don't protect your key well, it's your responsibility for having the photos released. It's not us as a service provider.
Okay, now I want to stop you right there. The key, then, is going to be in our fingerprints or in our retina or in the temperature of our body or something else. I don't understand, you know, how you actually get the key. And certainly fingerprints are copied. I mean, if you're arrested, you're fingerprinted and your fingerprints are on file all over the place. I would think that people would be able to duplicate fingerprints, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's right. Just like your social security number being duplicated all over the place and the fingerprints being duplicated all over the place.
Yeah.
That's why we need other type of biometrics that's not duplicable. That's our other team at UMass Dartmouth. We are working on a biometric and also collaborated with UMass Medical Center. So some other type of your information, your unique biometric physiological features, such as your heartbeat. Not everybody's heartbeat in the same rhythm. So that tells from you, between you, from the others. On the other hand, the heartbeat is dynamic and random. So if somebody copied your heartbeat, and then the next time they reproduce it, it's not you anymore.
Yeah.
See, that's different from the fingerprint. Fingerprint is unique but static biometric information of you. Heartbeat or some other type of biometric information that you have, that you only you possess, nobody else has it, is not only differentiate you from others, but also dynamic, changing. It's unreproducible.
All right, well, let me ask you about dogs. I mean, over the years, we've come to rely on the scent of dogs, picking up the scent of people and tracking them through the wilderness, escape prisoners, and that sort of thing. And the rationale is that everybody has a unique scent. Is part of my fingerprint or part of my key, part of my identity going to be my scent, which is different from yours? And will there be ways of detecting that as with a dog's nose?
That's interesting. Yeah, I have never heard of that part. That I would like to do the research on that part of the smell part of the human biology information.
Okay, well, that would may make another session for you and me if you do your research and get back to us and say, hey, I've got some information on the unique smell of every individual in the world. But this is what I'm told, is that dogs can detect the unique smell from a very, very little, just a person's socks or something like that. And they'll put them on the trail with the bloodhounds who will be able to find that particular smell sorted from others. And so it seems dogs already have that capacity. So, all right, Professor Liu, I'll look forward to having your report back on that. All right, where else are we going with this?
Okay, so this is one of our papers. That's we have a test bed,
mm-hmm.
Which is a little replica of the Internet of Things.
Okay.
And then we study various authentication mechanisms at different levels that I just mentioned to see the effectiveness and the usability is very important, not just the strength of security, but also the usability of security. And our other research, because you cannot say one method is better than the other under a special circumstances unless you have a quantitative way to measure the security.
That's true.
So that's our other branch, multiple disciplinary team doing the research is on the security metrics.
Yeah.
And right now we have two branches. One branch, the security matrices in the finance. So that's another paper that my colleagues from UMass Dartmouth, one is Professor Chi of Accounting from Business College, and Professor Ferdana of the same department that I came from, and with another undergraduate student and doing the research, that's to find out, to bring the awareness to the business people, especially big corporations, to let them understand the impact of the data loss incidents on their value, especially the public traded organizations, their stock market change.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a way to kind of incentive, let them know as a big corporate, that instead of government enforce them to do things, but make them self aware that they want to self regulate, because if they don't protect their data, and then your stock market will go down. This is the quantified data we provided, and it's black and white, those numbers to show the relationship between the data loss incidents versus their stock market values. And we have further work going on to be, of course, in long term, your reputation and the other business aspects gets affected. So this is our second paper to be presented also at the IEEE International Symposium on the technologies for homeland security.
Yeah, absolutely. And the business end of it is they're quite concerned over all the hacking. I mean, we've had it with Sony, we've had it with Target, we've had it with any number of different organizations, and some of it was thought to even come from North Korea. So I don't know if that has ever been purely substantiated yet, because some people contend with that and say, no, it was an inside job. I don't know if you have opinions on that or not. But yes, I would think business has to be very concerned over this.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Because now the Internet of Things makes the world so small. They can remote control through the Internet, remotely control everything in aspects of your life. So not just the individual, but also the national security is at the stake. And nowadays, it's not just the war with terrorists, it's a war of finance, mm-hmm. of health, of education, everything being involved, because Internet connects all the people, all the devices into one.
So is this a good thing, or maybe we were better off in the old days when everybody had their privacy and we weren't all interconnected? I mean, really?
Yes. Right now, it's very hard to hide from anybody. And that's another way which Chinese says, as also my mom always told me ever since I was little. If you think that something's bad, you better not do it. Because once you did it, it's not just the heaven knows, the earth knows, sooner or later, it will be known. So now the Internet is acting like a heavenly God. Observe you, everybody watching you. So that's why it's another good thing. If you look at the privacy issue that the Internet of Things might have brought in, but when you flip the coin on the other hand, they made tailor people to be more live in the moral, in a good moral world, because there is a God looking at you.
So what we're saying then is that this interconnection of the Internet, this all-pervasive viewing of everything that we do, has almost taken the place of a superior being like a god, and that we really can't cause mischief or do anything under the table anymore, because everything we do is going to be above board, and this is going to force everybody to be moral and good and not be cheating. Is that the prospect of the future?
Right, that's what I see it. And you can see that how the recent incidents of a couple of famous celebrities and those people that have high reputation and always respect them, and just a little flip, right? They tell the little fib. And that was like 12 years or some years ago. And because of the Internet, because of information, it's so exposing, and there's no privacy, it will be shown. So everybody, you have to... which says, respect yourself, respect the world, tell the truth, and to be a little fearful that what you do, you're supposed to do the right thing. So sooner or later, God will catch you.
Wow, that's pretty profound, Dr. Liu. And of course, that's right. You're using the example of Brian Williams, the anchor on NBC News. He tells a little fib, and it wasn't a big fib, but the point is, he's in the business of telling truths, not fibs, and he does it years ago, and all of a sudden he's found out about it. And Hillary Clinton had the same problem when she talked about how she was ducking bullets in Bosnia, and pretty soon it came out that she wasn't ducking bullets at all, and it was a lie. And we have to think that we can trust our officials who are in the business of telling us things that we have to rely upon.
Right, and these two figures are the ones that are highly respected.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you, because I highly respect the figures too, and we hate to see it when our leaders have feet.
Okay, I need you to hold that thought for a minute while we take a break, and be right back. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Whom in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?